Welcome to Serving Up, the podcast from Sirtra, the chain restaurant Total Rewards Association, dedicated to promoting and enhancing total rewards within the restaurant industry. With your host, Jess Williams, Director of Member Education for Sirtra. Her guest, attorney for Littler Law Firm, Jessica Kraft. Today's topic, recent developments in U.S. employment and labor relations.
Hello and welcome to the Chain Restaurant Total Rewards Association, Sirtra for short, podcast. Sirtra's podcast series focuses on employee total rewards, compensation, benefits, and restaurant industry relevant topics. For those who don't know Sirtra, we're a non-profit professional organization dedicated to strengthening and enhancing total rewards within our industry. For those who may not know, total rewards encompasses employee compensation, benefits, all the things that make up our work. Sirtra's goal is to educate and train representatives of member companies, providing networking opportunities within the industry and broadening the total rewards information available to restaurant industry professionals. We have been established since 1976, and we have close to 100 chain restaurant member companies with even more concepts covered. To find out more about becoming a Sirtra member, check us out on the web at CRTRAWEB.org. That's SirtraWeb.org. My name is Jess Williams. I'm the former Chief People Officer for Biscuitville and serve on the Sirtra Board of Directors as the Director of Member Education. And today we have got a great show planned for you. I have the wonderful pleasure of welcoming a new guest to our podcast, Jessica Kraft, who's an attorney at Littler Law Firm based in Texas. She is highly experienced and has worked with companies across a variety of stages, helping to look at their corporate policies, helping them, you know, make changes that are contemporary with the environment in which we're operating. She provides comprehensive services along with her colleagues to help assess and promote ongoing compliance. Jessica's focus areas include discrimination and harassment, wage and hour, policies, procedures, handbooks, litigation and trials. She's represented clients at all levels, including federal, state, and administrative courts. She's successfully defended clients both in federal and state jury trials as well. She's active with Claims Management Alliance, where she obtained her certified litigation management professional and certified claims professional designations, holding a variety of positions. Not only does she practice, but she also helps teach. And she is currently been teaching a deposition preparation course at the CLM Claims College. Jessica is very accomplished and has many notable achievements, including most recently being named Ones to Watch, the best lawyers in America, this year in 2023. And since 2019, so for the years 2019, 2020, 21, 2022, she was named a rising star of super lawyers here in Texas. Last but not least, amongst most recent notables are Professionals of the Year, Young Outside Counsel, awarded by the Claims Litigation Management Group. These are really impressive, Jessica, and evidence of your excellent work. And I am so thrilled to welcome you to the pod today. So on that note, let's get started. You know, we are in a post-pandemic era. Employment continues to be dynamic and an evolving area around the world. And here in the U.S., we've undergone a significant paradigm shift in many industries, being led by younger generations in the workforce, demanding higher quality of life, and also being supported by those in the older generations who agree that, you know, our employment contract of the past is in need of change, specifically in the area of employment benefits, whether that's greater flexibility with the option to work remotely, increased access to mental health resources, or more investment in the employee development and continued education. Every single company is being challenged to make changes. Navigating these changes is increasingly more difficult as they grow in both quantity and complexity. And their importance is higher now than ever before as inflationary pressures continue to impact the bottom lines of companies who've enjoyed one of the longest eras of economic stability and growth in the US. Jessica, if you would, please share with our audience, how does your organization, Littler, help companies maintain and enhance their culture, whatever their strategic goals are, ranging from promoting diversity to maintaining a high standard of ethics in the workforce?
Certainly. Well, first, I want to say thank you so much for having me on this podcast. It's a bucket item to be on a podcast, so thank you. But a little bit of background for the firm I work for, Littler Mendelsohn. We are the world's largest management side employment and labor law firm. We, as Littler, we work closely with the employers on various items such as diversity counseling, planning, and training initiatives. For example, in this past November in 2022, Littler launched its Inclusion, Equity, and Diversity Playbook, which is a comprehensive collection of resources designed to help employers navigate the legal and practical considerations associated with those IE&D programs. It is actually a free resource. It's a self-service tool.
Excellent. That
provides
really appreciate
employers
that.
With those
In fact,
resources. Those can include
I know
like
that
videos,
diversity, inclusion bias,
other podcasts,
has been
and high level
a
summaries.
Hot topic
and those generally
as
help
of late,
answer some of those fundamental
really
questions
starting with
about
sort of a resurgence of awareness led by the murder of George Floyd. Many organizations in the restaurant industry didn't have prescribed programs and really had to come up with feedback very quickly to learn what those programs involve. And some had to learn the hard way that, you really have to be thoughtful and conscientious about how you start to introduce these concepts into the workforce. So tell us a little bit about how you found yourself practicing law and employment law, no less.
Absolutely. This is, I think, the one thing in my life that I didn't really plan ahead for. I went to law school because I was a German major, which I've learned does not necessarily lend itself to really many opportunities in the real world. So I went to law school because as my parents like to say, I like to argue, seemed to be a good fit, as most lawyers are told as they're younger. While I was in law school, my roommate was very involved in the different employment law classes, and I laughed thinking, oh, that sounds incredibly boring. I can't imagine why you'd want to do that. And then lo and behold, my first year out of law school, I happened to be staffed on a matter that had to do with a discrimination lawsuit and realized that that just happened to be what I was drawn most to. It was a interesting look at an industry I wasn't very familiar with. And as I gained my years in practice, I realized I wanted to focus on that. And when I realized that's the type of law I wanted to practice, I knew, Littler, being the world's largest labor employment firm, was my ultimate goal. And now I'm happy to report that I've been here for now for about 3.5 years.
Over the course of your career, I mean, super interesting. Similarly, I had a passion for language. My language of choice was Spanish, so maybe I had a little bit more opportunities, but it wasn't something that I pursued to, as a focus area. But I would be lying if I didn't admit it's helped me in innumerable ways and throughout my career. But I'm curious, when you decided to make the switch and you started practicing law, now that you're with Littler, that is just so vast and has its, tentacles really in so many different areas, what are the things that, are sort of hot on your radar right now that you think companies really should be paying more attention to or not only just paying attention, but starting to really take action or making plans for?
I think that's a great question. We're all familiar, obviously, with the COVID pandemic and the huge implications that it has had on the workplace. One of those major things are things like wandering workers. Workers aren't necessarily, you know, might be ghosting employers, might not be showing up, more so than just no call, no show. They just don't show up for their first shift after being hired. But then there's also other changes that we're seeing on the federal stage, and things like these new laws that might seem new, but are essentially just reversions or new versions of laws that are geared towards pregnant and lactating workers. So really what we're seeing on that is with the omnibus bill that was passed with the Senate, because, you know, every year the Senate has to pass their budget spending bill, they included several bills that do impact workers. And predominantly going to impact the pregnant workers and applicants, as well as individuals who are lactating because they've birthed a child. And so those are two key new legislations that is going to be continuing to evolve. As again, we're still kind of in the infancy of some of these laws. Some of them are still getting regulations developed by the EEOC so we can fully understand and see how to apply them. I think I'm kind of getting a little bit ahead of myself, so I might want to step back to kind of explain what those bills are. The first one is called the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, and this is a law that is going into effect on June 27th of 2023. This law essentially says that accommodations are essentially required for qualified employers in regards to workers who are pregnant. And it's very similar in structure to the ADA accommodation requirements that many workers and listeners are probably familiar with. Of course, there are a couple key distinctions and some distinctions that we're learning about as the EEOC develops their different regulations pertaining to this law. Essentially, it says that covered employers have to provide reasonable accommodation to the workers, no limitations related to pregnancy, childbirth, or related medical conditions, unless that accommodation will cause the employer undue hardship. The PWFA, it only applies to accommodations. As you might be aware of, there are other laws that already apply for things like discrimination against a pregnant employee, and things along those lines. The PWFA is a federal law. There might be local jurisdictions that have laws that are a little bit different. So as long as those laws provide more or additional protections to those specific workers, then those are still going to be in effect in those local jurisdictions. Reasonable accommodations are generally going to be changes to that environment from how things are normally done. And again, we're kind of used to that context in the ADA, but in regards to the PWFA, there is a unique component to this in that it recognizes pregnant workers might just have a temporary need. They can still have any sort of a change where, you know, with the ADA, we're looking at, can they still do their essential duties? Under the PWFA, there's a change to that, is can they might be able to temporarily not be able to do their essential duties, but it's with the understanding that it's only for a temporary period of time.
I think that's really interesting, and that is an important nuance, I think, that will probably continue to evolve as, you know, the regulation gets, you know, further defined and fleshed out. You know, as an example, would that include something like, for, you know, lifting requirements? Maybe somebody's a package handler and they become pregnant and they're no longer able to lift a certain amount of weight. Is that an example that we're kind of talking about, or is it something different?
So that's actually an example that's been provided, is something to be excused from strenuous activities that might not be safe for that pregnancy. It could be the ability to sit or drink water, you know, just having a stool at the cashier stand, or having a bottle out that's, you know, in the back, where, you know, typically that would not be permitted. Again, obviously, there's still safety and protocols as well that have to be taken into consideration. But, other ones that they've identified are additional bathroom breaks. So there is a variety of these things. With the PWFA, though, it's not necessarily the employer saying, I'm going to, you know, I notice that you're pregnant, we're going to start doing this. That's not what the law says or is asking to do. We're not asking for some sort of very patriarchal viewpoint of it. It does mandate, and this is where it's a little bit more unique than the ADA, it actually codifies meaning it requires the actual discussion of that interactive process between the employee and the employer to determine what the accommodation would be. Again, there still is a medical requirement aspect to it. It's not just, you know, I feel like I want this. There still has to be some sort of basis in the, you know, medical field to support those types of accommodations. The other one that brings it a little bit different than what we're normally used to and seen in the ADA, because, you know, historically pregnancy isn't necessarily defined as a disability under the ADA. So that's why this law is kind of coming into as a stopgap. But for purposes of pregnancy, the law also makes it very clear, or, you know, argues very clear that if there is another accommodation other than making that employee go on leave, that other accommodation should be taken. And so it really is geared towards trying to protect the abilities of, you know, pregnant employees in the workforce from having to go out on those leaves if they, of course, they are able to have accommodations so that they can continue working.
So just to be clear, something to the effect of, you know, if an individual is pregnant and there's a way for the employer to make the work environment such that they can contribute, that's really the recommendation and the quote unquote expectation that we're anticipating this regulation will support, in other words.
Yes, that's correct. And as I said, with this, it's still kind of developing. The EEOC has a full year. So basically, we have until December before the EEOC actually gives us some regulations to really read through this law a little bit clearer. But on its face, that is what the PWFA says.
So it's so interesting. You know, you talk about it taking effect in June of this year, 2023, and then the requirement to sort of uphold it doesn't happen until sometime in December. Did I hear you right?
Sort of. So it goes into effect. So basically, the EEOC can start accepting charges. And so it won't, you know, investigate or really have the authority to prosecute any charges for anything that has accrued prior to June 27th of 2023. But the guidance that we typically would, you know, expect to see from the EEOC is not required under the law to come out until essentially December. We are seeing the EEOC coming out with some things like fact sheets and, you know, some of those other FAQs to give us some guidance in regards to how they're going to really treat it. But for what we would recommend based off of the structure and the historical notes for this law is really looking to the ADA and seeing how you handle most of those things under the ADA with the knowledge that there is a couple unique aspects to this new law.
If I'm hearing you correctly, I think, you know, my interpretation as a HR professional and advisor in an organization is talk to your attorney. Talk to your legal counsel. If you don't have representation, reach out to you at the Littler firm and make sure that, you know, your policies currently are compliant with laws like the ADA, and that you understand what that means. And if there are any situations that involve pregnancy in your workforce, you may want to contemplate those situations with your attorney to make sure that, you know, you're doing everything you can to mitigate any type of litigation, knowing full well that come June, the EEOC will be willing to accept those charges, regardless of having to provide any type of guidance to companies, right?
Yes, certainly. And really, it's those policies and those procedures to make sure those get in place before that new start date for the PWFA. Absolutely.
So the clock is ticking. It's February of 2023, just a few short months away. It'll be beautiful and warm in June. And the last thing any of us on the company side is looking for is a love note from the EEOC, if you will.
Exactly. No, it's never exciting to get one of those charges. So certainly new policies to take into effect with that PWFA. And there's also some other policies that we would also recommend overhauling if you know, in regards to that relate to pregnancy and pregnant workers. And, you know, when we talk about the PWFA, it relates to accommodations not only for things considered pregnancy or the birth of a child, but also what they call related medical conditions. And we are reading related medical conditions to include a variety of things, and that can include lactation. And I know that's actually specified under certain other jurisdictions where they do. I know, I believe it's California, I believe says something along those lines. I do not practice in California. I want to disclaim that. I practice in Texas and in Oklahoma. But there are some local jurisdictions that have those rules out there. And so that kind of moves me to the other brand new law that's just come in, and that's called the PUMP Act. And that PUMP Act is something that expands rights for lactating workers in the workplace. One of the things that I think surprises a lot of my clients is that, you know, this is not a new law necessarily, per se. The PUMP Act actually expands on one of the Obamacare era policies that actually required non-exempt workers to be able to be given reasonable break time and access to a location to pump or, express milk, however they seem fit as necessary if they are lactating because of the birth of a child. What this new version of this law does under the FLSA is actually expands it to essentially all workers. There are a couple exceptions in unique industries as well as size-wise, but it essentially has expanded it to both exempt and non-exempt. So really, nearly every employee might be touched by this type of law who is eligible, you know, again, within a year of birth and lactating as needed for that child.
Wow. Well, that's those two alone, I think, should leave every one of our listeners with a few to-do items, making sure that if you don't have space, that you're prepared to make accommodations and really get a clear picture on what those accommodations might look like. And for those of us in the restaurant industry where we've got, a lot of units, individual places, it's more difficult and more complex to try to solve for that. And so I think, taking advantage of the time that is in front of us is really critical.
Right. And well, it certainly seems very daunting. I certainly can appreciate that. And I think most people's first reaction is, if they're said accommodations, they think of a wellness room or a special room that's dedicated solely for, a breastfeeding or lactation. The law itself simply says that it has to be a private room that's shielded from view, without intrusion from the public or colleagues, and that cannot be a bathroom. And so, yes, again, first read, very daunting. Where it comes into means that there's different avenues. Yes, there's always that if you have the room for a wellness room or a mother's room, that's absolutely great. We recognize that's not going to likely be the circumstances for a lot of people, especially a lot of the listeners here. So the alternatives to that are things like if there's maybe a manager's office, maybe if there is a location that can be shielded through use of curtains or privacy screens. Even there's an influx of pregnancy lactation pods. You might see those at the airport. There are options for rentals. Again, recognize that those are a cost, but sometimes those costs, because you only need them temporarily, certainly tend to be a little bit cheaper than a lawsuit.
Yes, and protecting the bottom line, as we all know, is increasingly more challenging in our current environment. So those are all things that warrant some consideration, especially, when you think about the June timeframe is often when a lot of organizations just start to scratch the surface on their budget planning efforts. So all that to say, lots of things to be thinking about here in upcoming months. So on that note, is there anything else you would like to share with our listeners that you think they should be thinking about along like these lines? And, if they've got any follow-up questions, what is the best way for them to reach you?
Certainly. If they want to chat or discuss any further, you're welcome to email me. My email address is the letter J, last name Kraft, C-R-A-F-T, @littler.com. You can also learn more about Littler on our website, which is www.littler.com. You can also find Littler on LinkedIn, Twitter, social media such as Instagram and YouTube as well.
Excellent. Well, Jessica, thank you so much for your time today, and to Littler for helping to continue to support HR professionals and the CERTRA members. You know, we work hard to foster a positive workplace and remain compliant across restaurants in the U.S. And, you know, without the time that you've taken to help introduce some of these new changes, you know, it might be a little bit more scary waters for us. So thanks again. And for those of you listening in, we hope that you found today's podcast to be helpful. And if you have a suggestion, please email office@certraweb.org with any suggestions. We hope you'll tune in next time, and please subscribe so you won't miss any of the great information on our future podcasts. We'd love your comments and feedback as well. And remember, if today is about progress, not perfection, so please forgive us for any technical challenges. Have a great day, Jess.
Thanks, you too, Jess.
This has been Serving Up, brought to you by CERTRA, the Chain Restaurant Total Rewards Association. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Once again, you can contact us at our email address, office@certraweb.org. Thank you for listening. If you found this podcast informative, please subscribe so you don't miss upcoming episodes.